And we are going to start with Senate File 4116. Senator Chamberlain, and welcome, Mrs. Hofer.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. So what we have here is simply forecast adjustments, and then I've learned that difference between forecast and when it actually was spent. That's what we're doing here, making those adjustments. So we have one for, we have 4116, the education piece, but I understand we have an A5 that you wanted to put onto this as well.
But. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. I do, members, there was an A4 in your packet. That's no longer viable. We have the A5, which I'd like to move. And Senator, or Mr. Nauman, could you please explain the A5?
So, Madam Chair and members, I'd be pleased to. It's maybe a little bit of context for members. This is a little bit of an unusual process, but in many occasions, the K-12 and HHS forecasts are included in the omnibus bills for those corresponding bills. So they would be carried as a separate article. Similar to the approach taken in 2004, the Senate is proposing to do a forecast-only article. And as Senator Chamberlain identified, the approaches for Articles 1 and 2 conform, in most cases, the education forecasts appropriations to the amounts that were forecasted in February. That's largely the case with the A5. The A5 amendment does a couple of things. It brings a title in for basically the contents of the bill will be turned, that stand in the base bill will be turned into Article 1. Then an Article 2 will be added, and that does the HHS forecast articles and makes some carry forwards that are necessary to conform with the state's plan related to HCBS FMAP. It's highly technical. I'm happy to go into a little bit of that if members would like. Then in Article 3, which I will spend a little bit of time with, I think there is a recommended oral amendment in Section 1, but maybe I walk through the sections and then with your permission, Madam Chair, we can talk about that oral amendment. So Section 1 adds a definition to 16A for transfers. There are more and more acts of transferring money from one account, fund, or agency to another account, fund, or agency, and sometimes those get muddled with appropriation authority, so this provides a definition for that. Section 2 adds a budget close report. Members may recall that there was a significant change between the end of session in 2020 and when the budget closed, and we discovered at that point that there was no authority for MMB to give us the final general fund balance until the November forecast. So this adds that authority so that MMB can provide us with a budget close report. And the date is set at October 15th, which seems a little bit late, but that's the point at which MMB assures fiscal staff that they can have all the books tidied up. Section 3 is a cleanup provision, and Sections 3 and 4 kind of go together. The cleanup provision on line 10.27 eliminates clauses in subdivision 2 of 16A152. This is a section of law where provisions are added and subtracted with some legislative frequency, and staff always have to remember to pick up all the correct clauses so that the order of operations happens correctly in the calculations of the budget reserve. Madam Chair, I'm pausing because I thought Senator Benson had a question.
Senator Benson, let's wait until
I'm Madam Chair, yes, I just wanted to let you know I do have a question when we're done.
My apologies, I misread the signal. Then section 4 has a little bit of substance and some cleanup language. I'll do the cleanup first. The last few years, this is the section of law that requires expenditures concurrent with a forecast or allocations of resources concurrent with a forecast. The budget reserve is part of that. Buying back any K-12 shifts that remain outstanding is part of that. Those are sections or clauses 1, 2, 3, and 4. Clause 5 was added a few years back to pay back the 21st Century Minerals Fund for loans that were provided to the general fund when the economy had gone south. That provision has been satisfied, and so this amendment proposes to strike that language because it's no longer necessary, so it cleans up the statute. Similarly, in last year's tax bill, provision was added to pay back what was called the June accelerated sales tax. That provision has also been satisfied, so it's proposed that that language also be eliminated. It's no longer needed because it's been satisfied. Sections 5, 6, and 7, including that repealer in Section 7, all work together. Members may recall that I believe it was in the 2012 session, there was some bonds authorized called tobacco securitization bonds. Those bonds were authorized in 16A98. Shortly thereafter, those bonds were converted into appropriation bonds. So these particular references are no longer needed in statute. And so sections 5, 6, and 7 clean those up, including the repealer. Madam Chair, I have had the opportunity. Oh, I skipped over one important item. If I can bring members back to line 11.12, you'll note there is a change in the amount of the floor in the budget reserve. And the reason for that proposed in this amendment is to conform the budget reserve level to what is actually in the budget reserve today. So if this were enacted, the floor would be readjusted to the amount in the budget reserve now, and if it ever got reduced lower, the floor for a future forecast would be reestablished at the amount in the budget reserve today. That's the one piece that may not be completely technical. What I will say is I have shared at the chair's request and the author's request this language with MMB. They have reviewed it. I can't speak on behalf of them, but I have every reason to be confident that they're familiar with all these approaches. And in the part of those conversations, MMB, if I can take members back to Section 1 of Article 3, has asked for the striking on line 10.7 and 10.8 when authorized by law. There is some potential confusion that could exist in the definition. In MMB's judgment, that providing a definition of transfer, that some could read that sentence to be a specific transfer authorized by law, and it might conflict with the commissioner's existing authority to create accounts and move money back and forth. So that confusion was not desired. I felt comfortable bringing that to the author and seeing whether there was comfort with the committee at making an oral amendment to remove when authorized by law. So the sentence would begin, a transfer must reduce money in one account fund.
I'd like to incorporate that verbiage to strike when authorized by law on line 10.7 to 10.8 into the A5 amendment. Questions on the A5 amendment? Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, I do have some concerns with both the oral amendment and what this definition of transfer means. And if you remember, the Department of Human Services transferred about $14 million from, I believe it was direct care and treatment, into a fund that carried forward into, I believe it was an enterprise fund, so that they could use it for IT purposes. Instead of it canceling at the end of the biennium, they put it into an account so they could use it carrying forward. And I don't want us putting this language in to give even more latitude than is already given. So I have some concern about the authorized by law. And I'd like Mr. Nauman, in light of the fact that, and as you know, Madam Chair, Commissioner Franz transferred money out of the Stadium Reserve Fund. When there are vagaries in law or when the law is silent, MMB and the commissioners have taken great latitude with their transfer authority. And I think I don't know if we can resolve this today, but I think there needs to be some resolution as to when the law is silent, there should be some deference to the legislature.
So,
Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Benson, I understand the points that, you're making there. I'm not sure if it provides any comfort. This is merely an addition of a definition of what a transfer is. It's added into the into 16A. Fiscal staff have discovered over time that occasionally executive budget officers will call the legislative fiscal staff when language is being drafted to transfer from one account, fund, or agency to another account, fund, or agency that, I'm sorry, my voice is still, and encourage fiscal staff to include the language appropriated for transfer. The legislature typically tries to guard the use of what we call the magic word appropriation in a very unique circumstance when money is leaving the state treasury, as opposed to a circumstance where money is being moved from one place in the state treasury to another place in the state treasury. So the intent, at least I believe in the author's case, is to in the case of this amendment, is to define so that legislative fiscal staff can frankly point there is authority to transfer money when the legislature chooses to authorize it. In the circumstances that you have identified, I believe there was separate legal authority that the agencies were citing. I don't think that this would change that or adjust that, but I'm certainly open to more information if there's other thinking.
Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, I am concerned that this increases the agency's latitude. I am always happy to help fiscal staff do their job more effectively in light of what the legislature's intent was for the money. And so you and I can have a deeper conversation. I don't want to, we have obviously a very busy agenda today. I don't want to use the committee's time. I just would like to leave with some comfort that this doesn't, that MMB will not broadly interpret this in any way.
Madam Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, I have concerns about this as well. And when we appropriate money for a specific purpose, I get concerned, especially in light of the fact that MMB has taken great latitudes in many areas. And once we leave here, it is the words here, not and the language that is in the bill. So.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. I will withdraw the oral amendment for striking when authorized by law. I think this is worthy of continued conversations with MMB. If there needs to be some adjustment, perhaps this can happen on the floor. Senator Benson.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Nauman, I'm happy to be part of a huddle clarifying what this language would mean, because with the $14 million transfer, actually the legislature was silent and the department took the latitude because there was silence. And so I just want to make sure that we are crystal clear. Happy to be part of a huddle and be ready.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Benson. And I don't see anybody from MMB here. So we will keep the A5 clean and continue a conversation. That'd be great. Are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Okay, I renew my motion on the A5 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So the amendment is adopted. Okay, so, oh, you know, Mr. Nauman, real quickly, on the A5, I forgot to ask, the 10.13, the budget close report, can you give a better description of why we're doing that? Do you remember that was the year that we did the May, kind of a May preliminary forecast, and then it was way off of the November?
So Madam Chair, similar to Section 1 of this amendment, Section 2 is something that fiscal staff brought to you for consideration. There was a circumstance where there was a significant change between the end of session estimates and what the budget actually closed at in terms of budgetary balance.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that there was going to be, based on revenue collections, that there was likely to be a significant change. And Because MMB is not required to bring a fund balance until the November forecast, we didn't really have those final numbers until that point in time. Mm-hmm. So we began conversations with MMB about having an interim report that effectively gave all of us as a state a new fund balance that reflected what the final numbers at budget close were, and that resulted in this section of law.
Yeah, I love that section too. That's great. Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate that. That's a good amendment.
Of course.
Anything further on the amended Senate file 4116, Senator Chamberlain?
No, I have nothing.
Any questions, any comments, members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
I am thrilled that Senator Chamberlain's going to get to carry some HHS language.
Thanks.
It's due course. It's due payment.
I do what I'm told.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 4116 as amended be recommended to pass and placed on general orders.
On that motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is placed on general orders. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Westrum. Oops. Senate File 4043. Oh.
Madam Chair.
Senator Westrum, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here, Madam Chair and members.
So, Senate File 4043. And you have an amendment, is that correct?
Madam Chair, we do. And
it's an A5.
We want to move the amendment first.
Could you explain the amendment, please?
I sure can. Madam Chair, members, this is a change just to where the money would be administered through for the rural septics. MPCA has a program for low income that they administer to counties that helps failing septics with some contributions or dollars that they run. Bowser also has a program we've established more recently. But that is capped at 35%, and in many cases the counties came to me, your counties all across the state. You've maybe heard from some of them. They came to me and talked to us about just having these dollars go to the MPCA program, which in many cases they tandemly work together with the Bowser. The program that Bowser has and then MPCA does, and the MPCA is able to offer a little more of a match, especially to those that are on the lower income scales. And so rather than having it run through what's sometimes two programs, the counties asked if the dollars going to MPCA would be an acceptable change, because that's the program that they work with more often, and it has a broader reach to more low-income folks. And so it seemed like a reasonable change. And so, Madam Chair, that's all it's changing, is just the fiscal agent, MPCA, and through their rural septic replacement program of failing septics, as opposed to the Bowser program. So
peace in the waters on this, Senator?
Peace
Westrum?
In the waters, correct.
Okay, very good.
No pun intended.
Exactly.
Chair, I offered the A5.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A5 amendment. Any questions, members? All those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. A5 is adopted. To the bill, Senator Westrum.
Madam Chair, members, this is the annual or sometimes the biannual Environmental Trust Fund bill. Otherwise sometimes known as the LCCMR. We allocate these dollars out of the trust fund, work through prioritizing projects or grant requests for projects to protect, conserve, preserve, or enhance the waters, air, land, natural resources, wildlife, or fish in the state of Minnesota. And that is a paraphrase, nearly word for word, of what's in the state constitution. And so these projects range from outdoor recreational enhancements of trails, walking trails, ATV trails, fishing pier enhancements for people to enjoy the Great Lakes of Minnesota or rivers, as well as projects that restore prairies, help local communities with parks, updating parks or building parks, or local walking trails in local communities, to AIS funding through the University of Minnesota, or other projects through the DNR, all related to enhancing or preserving, protecting, conserving, or the great outdoors in Minnesota. And so it's a $70 million allocation. That was the trust fund allocation, which is 5% of the trust fund. Mind you, the trust fund is well over $1 billion. We reached that mark sooner than money would anticipate. About 5 years ago or 4 years ago, we hit that $1 billion mark. And I've been told when Chair Representative Munger put this in, the intent was to hit that billion before the 2024 dedication of the lottery funds, 40% of the lottery funds going into the trust fund would end. And so we hit that mark sooner, much sooner than we anticipated. There is a solid trust fund that funds this every year. And these are the projects that we can help spread across the state of Minnesota. There's about 75 or 80 projects. Is that looking to stat? But right around that number, Madam Chair. So there's a lot of projects, a lot of different areas that these fund. Madam Chair, I can go into more detail if members want, but that's that's the big overview, the picture, and it ranges from many areas in the metro area as well as most rural counties across the entire state. And so with that, I'm happy to stand for question, or if you would like, staff can walk through the details of the projects in a little more specificity.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Yes, we will do that. I know the PCA and Bowser are here and available for questions, and we do have the executive director for the LCCMR here. Perhaps she'd like to come up, Ms. Becca Nash. With that, while she's coming up, Mr. Mueller, if you could go through. I do have a question. How do we stay around the $70 million mark every year? Determines how much is spent?
Madam Chair, that goes up slightly every year. It's as the trust fund grows, that 5% has generally grown. Wasn't that many years ago we were allocating just $60 million.
Okay.
Dan maybe has this specific.
Okay. Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair and members, the last trust fund balance that I have is about $1.6 billion. So they take 5.5% of that, and Ms. Nash may be able to explain it also, but every 2 years they sort of figure out what that amount is, and then we stick to that number for a two-year term. And so about every 2 years it goes up based on the lottery money going into the trust fund, and then the earnings in the trust fund continuing to grow usually. So yeah, I think looking ahead, I think they're still looking at about a $70 million per year expectations, but that'll change based on what the actual value of the trust fund is. I can go through the spreadsheet right now if you would like. There's the spreadsheet
which is in
that
your
was
packet,
handed
members.
Out with or should be posted with the bill. It goes line by line. It lists all the projects in the bill. And what this spreadsheet does, it kind of ties into the information that the LCCMR provides on their website. I've included the project ID, so if people want to look up more information about each one of these projects, you can go to the LCCMR website and look up projects by project proposal ID. I also list the area where work will take place, the amount that was originally requested, and then the average score. So the projects that are in this bill, there are about 90 total projects in this bill. 19 of them were not part of the LCCMR process. I will not go through all the projects that went through the LCCMR process. The projects that were added in this bill start on subdivision 10 on page 4 of the spreadsheet. So there are 19 projects added here for a total of $15.575 million. So they're listed on page 4 of the spreadsheet and over on page 5. And you can see on those, for those projects, there is no proposal ID or average score because they did not go through the LCCMR process. So I'm not going to go through each project in the bill or on the spreadsheet, but if there's any questions on some of them, Ms. Nash can probably help out with the ones that are in subdivisions 3 through 9, and I can try answering questions of any that are in subdivision 10. Moving over to the bill, I just want to point out a couple of things in the bill that that were not part of the original LCCMR process. There is on page, it's for the city of Buell. It's on the last page of the bill, page 43. Senator Tomassoni had a bill on this. It involves a appropriation that goes back to 1987, which precedes actually the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. The city of Buell received a small appropriation and used that to work on a bigger project in the city, and the appropriation went for a trail. Since then, the city of Buell has wanting to sell a portion of this development for housing, and the work plan that was referenced in this 1987 appropriation referenced the whole area, not the specific trail. So we're trying to clarify that they can go ahead and sell a portion of this development that but does not include the trail. And there are some differences between the DNR was citing the old work plan that referenced the whole development area, not just the trail. So this allows the city of Buell to proceed with the development and not lose the trail or anything like that. But it's just a clarification. And I think the DNR is still trying to work with the city on this, and hopefully this helps them move it along.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could indulge maybe and have Mr. Mueller go through the simply the subdivisions here, I think pointing out to the members the areas of spending, whether it be water or other habitat. And I also at this time would like to say thank you to the staff and Director Nash for all the work that they do. I'm one of the co-chairs serving with Senator Westrum and Senator Tomassoni on the committee, along with other members of the legislature. And there's a lot of work that goes into this. In fact, we'd be just starting now looking at the next year's appropriations. But I think to get a little better idea, instead of going through the whole list, if you would, there's subdivisions here, and then I think the folks will understand a little bit more of what areas of the environment that we chose to spend the money on.
Mr. Mueller.
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, sure, I'll work off the spreadsheet. And I'll list the sub. I'll mention the subtotals for each division and what that is. The first subdivision is foundational natural resource data and information, that has $5.491 million, and you can see the projects listed under that. The big one there is on line 3I, which is establishing the Center for Prion Research. That was $3 million of that category. The next category is water resources, which is $3.744 million, and there are a number of projects listed under that. A lot of them are research projects. The next area is environmental education, subdivision 5, and that has just over $3 million. The big one there is on line 5B for increasing K-12 students learning to develop environmental awareness of $4 million. The next subdivision is aquatic, subdivision 6, aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, for a little over $4 million, 4.174. The big one there is on line 6A for $4 million for the Minnesota Invasive Terrestrial Plants and Pest Center. The next area is, subdivision is air quality and renewable energy for $1.253 million. The next one is subdivision 8. This is one of the larger ones. Methods to protect and restore and enhance water and habitat for $10.8 million. And then the subdivision 9 is the land acquisition and habitat and recreation for $26.6 million. This one is where a lot of the trail and parks and trail acquisitions and the bigger parks and trail projects fall under this category, subdivision 9. And then the last subdivision, as I mentioned before, is subdivision 10, additional projects and emerging issues for $15.575 million. And these are the projects that were added in the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen, any further comments? No?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think that's a pretty good overview of the work that's done by the council. And again, a lot of hours will be going into it. We've been doing it virtual now over the last couple of years, which has been, I guess, kind of handy in that we got members from all over the state of Minnesota that participate in these appropriations and all the hard work that they do. So I just want to shout out for the employees who are in the background that don't get a lot of credit. They do a lot of work on this, and it isn't just working with numbers. You have to work with the agencies and the RGOs that apply for the money, and they do a lot of work. And so I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator Britson. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know who this question would be to, but on subsection 9, just looking at that, could you talk a little bit about the total number of acres that is in the land acquisition or easements that we'll be purchasing there?
This would probably be a good time to welcome our Executive Director, Nash. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Becca Nash, the Director of the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Senator Johnson, we have...
Ms. Nash, you're going to have to get closer to that or move that microphone way over. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Senator Johnson, we have the land acquisition amounts kind of broken down according to type of ownership. And so for the state acquisition projects, we have about 216 acres that are going to be acquired, and those are for state parks and for state scientific and natural areas. We have another 119, these are estimates, but about 119 acres, and those are projected to be acquired by local units of government that are requesting funding either directly from LCCMR or through the DNR's local grant program, local park grant program. And then there are about 1,800 acres of conservation easements that are being projected to be acquired with these funds. And that is combination through state and local and nonprofit entities that would hold those easements.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so tallying up the two bills over the last 2 days, we've got close to 10,000 acres out of the last two bills that have been encumbered by the state. And I just, for folks at home who are keeping score, I just want people to know that this number is growing and growing each year. So we got to keep some tabs on this. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Executive Director Nash, I'd like to, if you have any further comments, anything you'd like to add?
Madam Chair, members, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, wonderful. Any questions for Executive Director Nash? Senator Marty.
Thank you, and I guess it relates not necessarily just to Director Nass, but also to Senator Westrum. The commission came up with two different packages that came close to getting your 12-vote recommendation. And this bill worked off of initially was the Young proposal. But I guess my question is, I can see us picking one of the two packages that the commission came close to, but I have problems, I guess, and this may be for Senator Westrum, with the idea of taking other projects that that the commission didn't even consider and adding them into the package. I guess that's what I have a problem with. The bill as introduced, or I think the House picked the other package, seems to me that those would be more appropriate things if we're trying to rely on the commission. And I guess I'm asking for a comment from Senator Westrum on the logic of taking other projects that may be good things, but that weren't LCCMR projects. They were other things that people introduced as bills for simple legislative appropriations.
Senator Westrum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Marty, to the question. This bill, first of all, about 78% of it is projects that came through the normal process. If there's a, but to your bigger question, this bill every year has a history of taking those recommendations, largely following many of the recommendations, but not always, and it is the legislative prerogative to take what might have come in the last 12 months as environmental or protections or enhancements of the environment, and also consider those projects. And so in many cases, for example, millions of dollars in the additional projects, Senator Marty, would go towards cover crops and Forever Green. Well, that is a project. Forever Green is something that the LCCMR has funded in previous years. They are moving to different levels of deploying their research as well as their cover crop strategy or Forever Green strategies, other cover crop initiatives consistent with that type of environmental enhancement and agricultural practices. And so the bill's still consistent with what the dollars are to be spent by the legislature for. The commission this past year did not ever come out with a consensus or a recommendation to the legislature because there were differing opinions. The basis of this bill is a proposal that had a majority vote of the commission, but any recommendations of the commission, as you recall, Senator Marty, need a supermajority, 12 votes or more, or else it is not a recommendation that passes to the legislature. So we took as the basis the projects that had the majority vote at one point in time, never receiving the consensus. Additional projects that have been brought to legislators or we have worked with over the years, as well as ways to enhance, protect, preserve, conserve the natural resources in the state of Minnesota, consistent with what the constitutional language requires, as well as projects that for different reasons haven't come to legislators or have come to light more in the last 12 months when the process was going on with some of the original projects. But I hope that answers your question. That totals about 22%. The other 78% is still in that process. So it's consistent with what typically has happened with LCCMR. There's it ebbs and flows, some years higher, some years lower. But the process brought the legislature nothing. So this year, as far as a recommendation. So if we started from scratch, we would have 100% of the projects that didn't even go through the process, Madam Chair, because none of them received the sufficient votes for the commission to pass it. We thought the best way to start would be take the majority projects, and we've worked from there, Senator Marty, I hope that helps answer your question.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I understand that none of the packages that were offered to the commission received the full 12 votes. Again, there were a couple of them that came very close, and I understand you're starting with one of them, but the question is starting with one of them and then putting in other projects, not saying they're bad projects, they're projects that I support many of them and I'd love to see them happen, and they were introduced as separate legislation. The legislature's funded them outside of LCCMR in the past, and then saying, well, because Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill totals were so low, they couldn't fund them there, ag bill totals were low, so we fund them through LCCMR. And that's my concern. So we put up this wonderful process, doesn't always come to the supermajority of the 12 votes that we would like to see. And when you're saying, so none of them came through the process, well, 78% of them, as you said, came through the process and came close. Others were not through the process this year. And I guess that's my objection to it, that we as legislators say we create this commission, but then in the end, we're going to do whatever we feel like. And I guess I have a problem with that direction for this, because I think the process is a good LCCMR process, and I object to that other part of it.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Westrum.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, and I brought this up in the prior committee, and I'd welcome if you would want to offer the amendment. But I want to remind the legislators, this commission was not delegated the legislative authority to review, process, and finalize all the decisions. But Senator Marty, if you'd want to offer that we just delegate our entire authority as a legislative process to the commission, and then they can just make the decisions, that would be a different discussion. You or others could offer that. I don't think most legislators I talk to want to go to that process and have the commission be the process, judge, jury, and final decider. And I think wisely the legislature has always left it as a part of a recommendation. We have commissions all over this state government, and many of those recommendations are never implemented. But Madam Chair, Ms. Senator Marty, we have that so we can hone in on narrowing down what the legislature ultimately will decide or consider. But just because a report comes back from a commission doesn't mean we adopt every paragraph or page of the report. And much like this, the commission does a great service in helping narrow down some 250 or 300 projects make this process more manageable, Madam Chair. But Senator Marty, what you're talking about is bringing forth an amendment and delegating the legislative authority. If the process is going to be the gold standard of whether something gets funded or not, then you would delegate your authority to the commission. And I'm not ready to do that. I don't think most legislators are, but we could try that. And then the process would be solidified. They would have all the discretion and authority, and then the legislature wouldn't have to review it. If that's what you're wanting to see, I'd welcome we should just have that discussion. But I don't think that's what most legislators want. That wasn't the intention when the legislature established the commission. And so that's why we have a bill in front of us. That's why we have a history that I don't think there's been any LCCMR bill that's gone through following exactly 100% of any recommendation that's come out of the commission, and this isn't any different.
Thank you, Senator Westrum. Senator Marty?
Chair, yeah, I'm not sure that's what I was saying, that we should just turn it all over to them and just 100% ratify everything they do all the time. When you picked in your bill, I mean, the biodiversity atlas, that was one of the projects in there, I would kind of like it. You took it out and put in other things instead. I guess that's my concern, and so it's just a general objection to the way it's done, that few people come in there and decide we're going to do it, and because we chair the committees, we carry the bill, we get to make the decision. But I understand what you're saying. I just disagree with it, and I also don't think it means we have to say, well, we either accept 100% exactly as is, or we can do what we want and put 22% projects in that weren't even considered by the commission. I think there's an alternative to that, and that's my objection.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Any further comments? No? Okay. Senator Westrum.
Madam Chair.
Final comments, please.
Madam Chair, I think we've kind of covered the breadth of the bill. There's a lot of investments in many different corners of the state of Minnesota to protect, conserve, preserve, enhance the lands, waters, airs, natural resources, and fish in the state of Minnesota. And so that's what our constitutional directive gives us as a legislature to how to spend the environmental trust funds. We have dollars for the DNR to replace some drought tree seedlings, for example. That wasn't coming through the process. But, Madam Chair, that drought happened last summer. The House is pushing for general fund dollars. These dollars are consistent with what's happened before in the DNR to help replant trees. So there we have a project that Senator Marty's talking about, very consistent with what the ENRTF, the Environmental Trust Fund, was set up for, and to enhance our environment. And we've got that funded here in this bill. And so look through the projects. Most of your districts are impacted in one way, shape, or form, whether it's parks, dollars they'll eventually be able to apply for, whether it's ATV or walking trails or biking trails, whether it's a restoration of prairie, whether it's a cover crop through Forever Green that may now be able to be planted as wellhead protection in areas in members' districts, or other types of alternative agriculture crop farming along with traditional corn and soybeans, yet forever green, growing between the rows. There is research to help bring forward more renewable fuel options growing right here in Minnesota. Madam Chair, as I said in the Environment Committee, taking a renewable fuel growing on our farms with now the possibility of new cover crop options and alternative practices for those farms, turning that into fuel to possibly fuel more of Minnesota's cars and trucks, even research that would take diesel engines that could run on up to 100% ethanol, Madam Chair. Imagine that. Renewable fuel growing with cover crops, turned into renewable fuel right here in our state, and replacing diesel engines with ethanol. That type of research is what we can have happen right here in Minnesota because of the Lottery Trust Fund, the Environmental Trust Fund, and these dollars that can specifically go towards improving our environment in the state of Minnesota. And so I would urge your support as we move this bill through.
Thank you very much, Senator Westrum. And members, we have several motions on the table. This bill will be going to conference committee. So we are going to be laying Senate File 4043 on the table. And now we have House File 3765 before us. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move that the contents of Senate File 4043, as amended by this committee, be amended onto House File 3765.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I also move that the House File 3765, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. 3765 is placed on general orders. Thank you very much, Senator Westrum, Executive Director Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members.
Mr. Mueller, thank you. Okay, we are Senator Dames, 3287.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today I have Senate File 3287. And Senate File 3287 is a bill relating to commerce and it's modifying department enforcement powers, regulating the market conduct examinations, requiring some reports. And there are various parts in the bill. There's a section dealing with penalties. There's a section dealing with enforcement actions, multi-state examinations, market conduct cost, and the completion of the examination, the time frame, the depositions, and the report to the legislative body, and also some language in respect to enforcement. With that said, Madam Chair, the fiscal note does have a zero cost. There are some areas in the bill that do deal with some financing. One of those would be Section 1, Subdivision 6, Article B. That deals with some of the fines, and there would be a cap on the fines that could be put on. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you, Senator Dames. We do not have that fiscal note before us. Is there any questions about that, Senator Kent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask quickly, because when we saw this in Commerce, I know there was a lot of conversation still taking place in negotiation, and I believe Senator Dames at the time, you know, indicated that things were getting pretty close, and I was just wondering if he could just give a quick update on where that stands, if we have reached the proverbial peace in the valley, and what the plan is for this moving forward.
Senator Dames. Thank you for the question. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Kent, for the question. There are still some articles that are open that are still being negotiated, and I am moving the bill forward, hoping that'll encourage both sides to get together and get some negotiations done to get this completed. But the ones that are still open are the Section 1, the penalty provisions, and Section 2, which would be the limitation of the enforcement actions, and then I believe there's one more. Yes, and in Section 8, part of that's been approved, part of that's still under negotiation. And those, Section 8 deals with the fine imposition, and Section, the other section that's still open, deals with limitations on retroactivity as far as accountability with fines. The other items have been agreed to.
Senator Kent, are you good?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And members, I know Senator Dames, you mentioned the fiscal note. We do not have that.
It's coming.
It's coming? Probably should have that. Are there any further questions for Senator Dames?
It's posted now.
Very good. It is posted, the fiscal note. If you would like to look at that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingraham.
Madam Chair, did Senator Dames say there was no cost?
Senator Dames.
The fiscal note has a zero cost to it.
Right. Okay.
I think the reason it's probably here is because of the section in the bill that deals with the fines and capping the fines. I may be wrong, but that would be my assumption.
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I'm catching up myself on this one. I just want to review the fiscal note really quickly before. I suspect Senator Dames' comments, in fact, are correct, that that's why the bill is in front of the committee. But I want to review the fiscal note just quickly.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dames.
We do have Mr. John Kelly from the department, if you'd like him to speak to the financial.
Thank you. Yeah,
note.
That's a great idea. Thank you, Senator Dames. Mr. Kelly, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs at the Commerce Department. We do indeed have a zero cost on the fiscal note. We can do this with our existing market conduct resources, and in relating to the fines, We never anticipate that Minnesota businesses or insurance companies will break the law, so we don't anticipate ahead for costs of enforcing fines. So that is why we have a zero on this fiscal note.
Okay, very good. Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair, I'm just skimming this relatively brief fiscal note. Myself and the agency, it's consistent with the testimony. The agency's ability to impose these penalties in excess of $25,000 and costs of doing that work can be assumed within existing resources according to the fiscal note.
Okay. Any questions on the fiscal note? It is being passed out.
Madam Chair.
Everybody has that. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
On a different note, to the testifier, what fines? I mean, tell me what. You don't think there's going to be any fines, but what could there be for? Give us an example, please.
Mr. Kelly.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, there could be an enforcement action, and through the course of a market conduct exam, there could be a fine leveled if there is a breach of Minnesota law that is found to have occurred through the course of that investigation, but that's not a certainty. So there's this market conduct exams are done, to look at insurance company action, and, you know, there also are market conduct exams that happen across states, but there is, you know, there's not a determined outcome. So there could be a fine if there is a breach of law. And I don't know if Chair Dames has anything to add there.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Dames.
Yes, I just wanted to go through here. Basically, what the language says is unless the conduct involves a willful violation, the maximum total amount of civil penalties imposed by the commissioner under this section for all violations of an identical or substantially similar law, rule, or order related to the conduct prohibited by Chapter 60A and 79 during the calendar year must not exceed $25,000. Give you an example. Let's say that you have a notice that needs to be sent out in 30 days, and the computer generates it in 45 days. And so let's say there would be a penalty for that, which would be understandable. But the computer may have generated more than one renewal notice or whatever it might pertain to that has the days were incorrect. There might be 10 of them. There could be several of them that the computer automatically generates. This is saying that that occurrence would have a maximum of up to $25,000 fine. So you couldn't go and say there's 10 of these violations, so we're going to fine each one this many dollars. This would cap it. So that's what that would pertain to.
On line 1.13. Very good. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the penalty issue, again, I understand you don't want to have, if there's one violation that occurs 10 times, you may not want to stack it all that way. But $25,000 when we're dealing with this kind of business, it strikes me as pocket change. And I guess I'm curious whether that Mr. Kelly and Senator Dames, the comment on $25,000 is a maximum fine, strikes me as minimal, way too small. But
Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, I think we need to look at this. This excludes willful violations. This is a violation that happens, and it was not intended, and when it was caught, it was corrected. So I understand where you're coming with the $25,000, but if this is shown to be a willful violation, this limit does not apply to that.
Mr. Kelly.
Madam Chair, members, this is one of the sections of the bill that the chairman mentioned that the department and stakeholders and Senator Dames are still working out, and I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator Marty, you good? Okay. All right. We have the fiscal note. Any questions on that? And any further comments? Senator Dame, final comments.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate you hearing Senate File 3287. It's my understanding the next stop is to general orders. So thank you very much for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 3287 be recommended to pass and be placed on general order.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate File 3287 is placed on general orders.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Dames. You know what? Senator Lang, if you don't mind, we're going to run to Senator Duckworth. I think your Senator Lang is going to take a little more time. Sorry. Yeah, you're high maintenance. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies to Senator Lang, but I appreciate his willingness to cooperate.
Do you outrank him?
I definitely do not. Matter of fact, I depend on him for a ride sometimes when we're up at Camp Ripley. So, good morning, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be before your committee.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Mm-hmm. To your bill.
To my bill. So, Senate File 2011, this bill allows a fund transfer for Independent School District 191, which is Burnsville Egan Savage. The district has excess building lease proceeds available due to decreased need for real property for school purposes. The net proceeds would first be deposited in the debt retirement fund to satisfy any outstanding principal and interest payments on bonds attributable to the lease, and then the remaining net proceeds would be deposited in the district's general unrestricted fund. In absence of this bill, the funds would go into the district's operating capital account, a reserve account in the general fund. And very briefly, from Dr. Teresa Battle, who is a superintendent of this district, she has shared with me that the primary purpose for this exemption would be for the school board to be able to use the funds in a way that best meets their local needs. That would most likely be in regard to pre-K through grade 12 pathways model, which is designed to support each student in finding their passion, preparing them for success after graduation, as well as early literacy programming, which is foundational to their core work. This bill has no fiscal impact, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. And again, we don't have the fiscal note, so there is it is coming. So do we have any questions about that? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question here for question I have to do is, I heard the word early literacy, and as you know, literacy is a big, very, very important. And just wondering when you talk about literacy things, and not just early, but K through 12 in general, could you just talk a little bit more about what your thoughts are in regards to literacy in general or early literacy? And doesn't stop what we're going to do here, but I would just like to hear it since we have you here today. Thank
you. Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. I appreciate the question. It fits very well with the bill we passed earlier this week off the Senate floor, which had to do with literacy for kids all across the state of Minnesota. Much like what school districts are experiencing all across the state, which is a dire need to help our children learn to read, especially at a young age, this district in particular is also focusing on that as well. After a couple of years of uncertainty in the classroom, we've realized that kids need some extra attention, support, and help and resources when it comes to helping them learn to read, which is why I'm proud to have helped bring forth that bill that we passed off the floor earlier this week, which is going to help little kids learn to read. This adjustment to this district and allowing them some flexibility with their funds will allow them to do something similar at the local level should they choose to. Thank you.
Senator,
yeah, thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that. The language of this gives them a great deal of latitude. I want to bring it up because I think if you're going to use this money for anything, one of the best things you can do is for reading, especially by third grade level at third grade. So I'm just putting a word in your flexibility to do that because I think it's the most critical need for our kids. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Members, if you're okay, there is a zero fiscal note. I'm going to have Mr. Nauman testify. He has the fiscal note. I don't know why we don't have it. But if you,
Madam
it
Chair.
Is posted now.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Why doesn't he share this with us?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's a sneaky plot to keep him.
Exactly.
Oh, that form. Okay.
There you go.
No,
keep us in the dark.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I think we maybe dropped the ball in terms of getting all the paper on this fiscal note organized. The language of the bill proposes to permit the school district to take an excess in their building lease proceeds and then use those resources differently than what current law would provide. And under the language, the money could first be deposited in the debt retirement fund to satisfy any outstanding principal and interest on bonds that the district may hold, and then any remaining net proceeds could be deposited in the district's unrestricted general fund. In the absence of the bill, this money would be under current law would go into the district's operating capital account, which is a reserve account for the district's use for a variety of specified uses. And if I got any of that wrong, I know Ms. Hofer will correct me.
Ms. Hofer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Mr. Nauman actually did summarize the mechanics of the bill correctly. He does still remember a good deal of his education finance terminology. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Exactly. He sure does. Senator Ingebrigtsen, you had your hand up.
Madam Chair, I have to ask the question then, and maybe you did clarify it, Mr. Nauman. Why do they have to come here for this?
Mr. Nauman.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is, in some respects, a fairly routine process within the K-12 space. There are certain circumstances where school districts, when they have an excess, the statute governs how those resources can be used. In a circumstance like this, sometimes a school district has an extenuating circumstance or a unique need, and they'll often come to the K-12 committee and make the case, we would like to use these resources that are available to the district and would otherwise, in some cases, be canceled back to the property taxpayers, which is not the case here, or those monies the district would prefer to use those resources in a different way, and that does require legislation. When you look at a K-12 bill, it is a K-12 omnibus bill. It is not uncommon for this to be a part of one of the articles deep in the bill, where a collection of school district transfers have been considered by the E-12 committee and then are brought forth as part of the omnibus. I think given the circumstances of this particular session, this particular fund transfer is being handled as a single bill. If I get that wrong, again, I know Ms. Hofer will add to it.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just simply wondering, the state of Minnesota gets their fingers involved in a lot of things, and I'm just wondering what the feeling is, why school boards don't have the authority to do this themselves, but I guess statutorily we don't allow that. So.
Senator Marty.
Hey, Madam Chair, I was going to make the same point. This happens all the time, and I remember this happening a number of times, and it's question what good it does, but we do have it in the law, so that's what we do it.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Okay, members, I don't see any further questions. Senator Duckworth, final comments?
No, Madam Chair, I just greatly appreciate the committee's consideration. Thank you.
You bet. Absolutely. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 2011 be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate File 2011 is placed on general orders.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Senator Lang. A new bill? Senator Lang, welcome.
Good
morning,
Madam.
So, members, you have Senate File 3875, which is in your packet, and that is not being used. Is that correct, Senator Lang?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
And what is being passed out is Senate File 4233, which will be the vehicle.
That is correct.
So okay.
Thank you. 4233, the bill itself represents the enlistment bonus and enlistment incentive. It's more money to keep our troops in the Army.
Okay.
And first off, Madam Chair and members, I think I'd like to throw a couple of thank yous
Absolutely.
Out there, which I think is appropriate this time. A big thank you to the agency, both Executive Director Kerr and Commissioner Herkey, as well as Representative Eklund in the House for the work we've done trying to reach an agreement. And Madam Chair, I can say that holding a signed agreement in my hand which is puts a big smile on my face, and I think that serves the veterans community well as we roll towards the end of session and have an agreement on this. So the commissioner is on board, and Representative Eklund is on board, and I'm on board. So with that, Madam Chair, if you'd like to start with the spreadsheet, we can go line by line with what the items are, and then I could speak to each bill individually, or if there's any questions at that point, we could take a pause and go from there.
Thank you, Senator Lang. So everybody's on board. I'm trying to catch up here.
So, Madam Chair, over the last 12 hours, there has been a lot of flurry of activity around the Veterans Bill. As of right now, myself, both the chairs in the House and the Senate, and the minority members have, the minority lead in the Senate is aware of what's going on. I was just on the phone with Senator Newton. And I believe Representative Detmer in the House has been updated this morning as well. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
I'd like to have a walkthrough because I appreciate the agreement, but I think we ought to know. And
you're
so
right.
Let's walk through. And I understand also there were a couple extra things and not quite sure if they were or not. But I think especially
right.
for Finance Committee, I'd like a walkthrough.
Absolutely. And members, too, you have an old spreadsheet in your packet. The new spreadsheet has been passed out. And it's dated 5-5 of 2022, 8:19 a.m.
Madam Chair, the A3 amendment is what represents all this, so I think that needs to
be. And that A3 should have been passed out and posted also. Okay, wonderful. Senator Lang, to the bill. Brief
Madam
summary.
Chair, did you want
Mr.
me to walk
Erickson,
through?
Right, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think everybody should have the right documents in front. It sounds like we've got appropriate document control going on. You'll see what represents the agreement in the first column along with the current year in the fiscal 23 column along with one item in the fiscal 22 column, and then the tails in these slightly shaded columns off to the right. The bill contains $2 million in each biennium for the enlistment and re-enlistment bonuses that were in the vehicle, as Senator Lang described. There's a $200,000 one-time appropriation for activities related to commissioning the USS Minneapolis-St. Paul. There are There's $830,000 in ongoing annual money for the new state veteran cemetery in Redwood Falls. There's several provisions related to housing for veterans. Among these are $1.1 million for tenancy support and landlord engagement activities to encourage landlords to rent to veterans. $5.4 million in one-time money to the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans dealing with issues relating to veteran homelessness. There's $500,000 one-time to help construct a new Fisher House near the Fargo-Moorhead VA hospital, along with $1.7 million for temporary housing options, which include hotels in which homeless veterans are being put up on a short-term basis, and to increase engagement and outreach related to that program that is already operated by MDVA. There is $147,000 in grants to veteran service organizations, congressionally chartered veteran service organizations. These would be competitive grants with certain eligibility requirements that are described in the policy article in this bill. There's also some changes to county veteran service officer grants that are operated by MDVA. There's an increase in the amount for which counties would be eligible, as well as increased activities which would be eligible uses for those grants. There is $774,000 one-time for wastewater system upgrades to a veterans campground on Big Marine Lake. $24.9 million for service bonuses to post 9/11 veterans in Minnesota. And then there is two pieces to the Veterans Home Supplemental Funding, which came before this committee before. The $10.3 million in fiscal 22 is to backfill increased cost in those projects that we've already seen and to do just what was in the federal grant. The $16.5 million in fiscal 23 is to reverse some of the decisions that were made around value-based engineering and that were cut from the projects during as they moved into construction and operation. And Madam Chair, that brings us to the bottom. The bill before you spends $64.9 million in the current biennium and $10.2 million in the tails. In
off the top of my head, I believe that came to 75.062 as a three-year number.
Off the top of your head, that's pretty good, Mr. Erickson. Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair, I think you were interested in maybe having a quick conversation with the committee about the value of these accounts as they were considered the first time through. And unless my math is off, Mr. Erickson, I think the 22-23 number was 28.883 in general fund appropriations. So the proposal in front of the committee is 35.997 larger in 22 and 23. The tail was previously a $2 million appropriation or a planning estimate, and the number is now 10.182, so that's an expansion of 8.182 compared to what the committee saw previously.
Okay, very good. And I think we need to have a motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen, on adopting the A3 amendment, which is to delete everything.
Madam Chair, I move the A3 amendment.
Any questions on that motion? Don't see anything on that motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The A3 is adopted. Okay. Senator Lane.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think there's probably a little bit of explanation due to the committee on a couple of the bigger dollar items. In particular, when it comes to the veterans' home, there is the Section 4 of the bill, page 5, starts there at the 10.3. And I know that I did have some explanation to you prior committee hearing. However, what I would say is this is the value engineering. As prices have increased with these veterans' homes, this is an attempt to get them back. And I don't think I mentioned it last time around, but this time I would like to mention, when they talk about value-based engineering and the good work of the agency trying to get these homes built for the dollars that we allotted them, this would add, you know, my personal problem with this is, as we've gone forward, is they've replaced lifetime roofs with 25-year roofs, or they've taken away an ambulance bay and had an ambulance door, so we'd be loading service members or patients in and out outside, where this would put them back in line with what those original design elements were. Also, a big one I think probably deserves a little explanation is the veterans bonus. The state of Minnesota historically has every armed conflict that the state of Minnesota has set their sons and daughters to has paid a bonus when that armed conflict has come to a close. We are at that stage, so we've had World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam War. We've had bonuses paid out in the middle 80s for Grenada, Panama, in 1991 when we were in the Gulf War, and now over the course of 20 years, the cease of operations in Afghanistan have kind of put the end stamp on a 20-year global war on terrorism, which is why we're here. The value of the 24.8 reflects a calculation by the House that would put us in that 65, I think, believe, about 62 to 65% range of applicants that would be applying for this. The department is concerned, and I had mentioned that to the commissioner this morning about if it does go over that spend, if they can go into a deficit spend on the count, or if it's something where we need to address it again next year in the budgetary cycle when it comes up, if we get that kind of response, being that it's 2022 and not 1991, and we all have a small computer in our hand where we can communicate in such a rapid fashion, I would assume that we might exceed that number. The number that the Commissioner Herkey had mentioned was around 85% expectation. There is some language in the back half of the bill that goes into quite detail about who can apply for these grants or these bonuses and how the value of each of those bonuses change over the course of time. That starts on page, I believe, I just started looking at this morning, so I believe it starts on page 11, subdivision 2. Nope. Sorry about that.
Page 8, isn't it?
Page 9. Section 4. section 4, and then goes on to page 10, where 10 and 11, actually, where it starts talking about how that bonus will be paid out over the course of time. So I hope that kind of puts a capstone on the spend. And I stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ling. Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and members, I haven't yet had a chance to talk with Mr. Erickson about this, but I have had some conversations about how we will track this bill. Given that the Senate has already passed a position on this provision, and it now in legislative process, and a conference committee is not being created, and a set of tracking is being produced out of the conference committee. The conversations with MMB revealed that we think that it lives within the budget rules to take the following action in terms of tracking. The Senate position would not be reflected in global tracking for this bill until the House, if the House enacts the bill as is being proposed here, and they are the same, and the bill goes to the governor, then the money would be tracked only as a final position. The reason for that is to maintain the integrity of what the Senate original position was and what the House original position for this bill would be, so that this end it would effectively become the action of the Senate in this case would be more or less silent because of the original action of the Senate. I know this is a little bit complicated, but it is not uncommon for members to call fiscal staff after session is concluded and say, what is the original Senate position? If we effectively overwrite that position with what's being done here, then we would not be providing you full information. So I want to put that on the record so that members understand how we're going to track this moving forward.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman. I'm confused on that, but I'll let that one go, and I can talk to you later about that. The question I have is the service bonuses. How does that compare with what we've done in previous conflicts? And you said the estimate was that only 65% of eligible people will apply, but now you're thinking it might be more like in the mid-80s because easier ways of communicating. Could you clarify that? I'm just curious how big it is, how it compares with previous ones, and anything more about that, how many people are likely to apply?
Senator Ling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, the answer realistically is we don't know. That's a rough estimation by the department. The House had used historical figures to put that number in play. The original value was around the $40 million mark. I'm amenable to the 24.8, thinking that at some point in time, if the number of individuals increases or does, my thought is that it probably will be a higher range. If you go to page, I believe it's 11, it does talk about, historically speaking, and I don't know what year original subdivision 5 was passed, but it does increase the value of those bonuses from 300 to 600, from 600 to 1,200, and up to 2,000 for some of those individuals that were, let's just say that their exposure to service, their service credentials are probably a little bit on a higher level. So I hope that kind of addresses what you're looking for.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that does. I was just curious, this tracks with what we've been doing, inflation adjusted, roughly speaking, for previous conflicts as well.
I would agree with
Senator
that.
Lang.
Thanks.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. One of them is on page 10, line 29-32. I'm seeing there's a change, what looks like maybe from previous programs. Striking whose home of record at the time of entry was the state of Minnesota, and being changed to at the time of application. At the time of service is when they represented Minnesota in the conflict, and especially when you have this period of time, the likeliness of them having moved and not being in Minnesota for 30 days at the time of application. I'd like to know why that change from home of record at the time of entry into active duty instead of and being changed now. Could you explain why there is that change?
Who would like to take that? Senator Lang?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to say that as I read through the strike through, there has been in the, well, the conversation over the last several years has been the nomenclature of the DD-214 is something that is post-World War II. So anybody that would be eligible for this would have to have a DD-214. However, the change in this, I'd have to speak probably with the author to make, or the provisor's office to make sure that I'm saying this correctly, but I can say that over the course of the last 20 years, the Minnesota Guard or the Minnesota Reserve forces that have been deployed oftentimes supplement our forces with people from outside the state of Minnesota. Not only that being said, but our members have served in Minnesota with states, other states from the U.S., so or even with active duty forces. So the point of the fact is they have to be a Minnesota resident and a service member of an armed conflict. Whether or not they served with the Minnesota unit or not, I think, is subsequent to the fact that they were a serving member, if that makes sense.
Senator Kickmeyer.
Yeah, I think you're going into a certain area where I'm very, very focused on the change. Mm-hmm. Home of record at the time of entry into active duty, Minnesota, and it says indicated on the person's DD-214. So I see that connection. But what's different, though, is more so that now they have to have lived in Minnesota for 30 days at the time of application versus lived in Minnesota at the time of service. So I'm not confident that we are addressing the correct group of veterans here, and we're excluding those for whatever reason. And I think the real key thing is in previous times in the state of Minnesota, not in the state of Minnesota 30 days before they apply. And so I have a concern there as to what we are doing. And I just don't know that I want to hinder this moving forward, but I think we need to make sure this is clear so we don't run into trouble later, because this is foundational to the whole program. And so, Senator Lang, we can talk about this, work together about this. Maybe I need to understand it better, make sure it's clarified. I just don't want to say I'm just okay with this right now in this language, even if we move this forward. I'm glad to see it move forward, but I want to make sure this is clear before we take a final action on the bill on the floor.
Fair enough, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Kiffmeyer. I think I would agree with that. If there is further clarification before we get to the floor, I'll make sure that it's done.
And Senator Lang,
Kiffmeyer, would you like to be a part of those discussions?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And Senator Lang, I have scheduled time this afternoon with the Vets Military staff already, so I could really have a better understanding, in part because this language, not the amendment, but the language is in the state government bill. I need to understand this and make sure we're really clear on this, not because they object to the whole concept. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Kiffmeyer, unfortunately, I believe this bill is on the floor today. So we need to...
We'll do it quickly.
We need to move. Senator Kiffmeyer? Okay, thank you. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought that was an interesting note as well. I do think that given the length of the conflict and so on, that somebody who may have lived in Minnesota at the time they enlisted 15 years ago, may well have served their time, moved to some other state, and the question is, do we want to be focusing on them or people who really are planning to live in Minnesota now? I mean, I think that's all a legitimate question, but I think given the length of this conflict and the fact that we are now paying it, I think the goal would be to hit people who are truly see themselves as Minnesotans now. I can live with the language either way, but it does strike me this may be better than what we had in the past, given the mobility of people and the length of the conflict.
Thank you, Senator Marty.
I just want to finish that. This is a bonus program for what they did at that time in service.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Senator Ling, you have any final thoughts on that? Need to probably.
I think, thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm probably halfway between both Senator Marty and Senator Kiffmeyer in my opinion of the topic. I think that maybe an easier or better way to go about this is saying your home unit and when you served with your home unit may be more applicable to where you lived now or then. If you served with the state of Minnesota, that may be in how that looks in a formative amendment, I will have to get back to you. I will make that promise to Senator Marty and Senator Kiffmeyer before they seat on the floor. There's gonna, if there needs to be a change, we'll do it.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate file 4233 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders.
On that motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. 4233 is placed on general orders. Okay, very good, members. That's it for today, and plan on having hearings, not sure, but possibly Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. So with that, have a wonderful weekend. Finance Committee is adjourned.
Thank you.